Hey team, welcome back to the show. Today it is Coach Natalie and I talking about optimizing lower body training for women and really getting a lot deeper than just the basics here. I'm really excited to dig into this. You and I both love training, but really so many new clients come from a place of wanting to build a better lower body. Feel like they're working super hard, but not seeing the results. So I'm really excited to kind of dig into, again, just past the like, hey, here's the basic movement patterns that we need to dig into. Really getting deeper into how to construct a more effective training program. Really a lot of the things we focus on with clients to really bring up those areas where you're struggling to see the changes you want. And again, for so many people, like be it glutes, quads, like building a better lower body is such a big goal within coaching that I think this will be a really fun topic. And I think this will be very helpful. Again, getting deeper than just the like, do this movement for glutes or do this movement for quads or whatever, but really getting deep into the thought process behind what we're doing when we're building out a program. What do you have to add to that, Natalie?
We did a series, like kind of like a mini series over the past few months where we highlighted, you know, like quad training, where we broke it down, quad training, hamstring training.
Yeah, I was there, I remember.
Yeah. And then so there's also like a glute training, you know, podcast episode, which we should link in the show notes below. Because I thought those were really good breakdowns, but I thought it would be nice to just kind of like bring it all together in terms of like how we would construct like an effective lower body training.
Yeah, essentially, almost like we planned this. This will really tie together what we've talked about over the last few months as far as optimizing glute training, optimizing hamstring training, optimizing quad training. We didn't talk about calves. We're probably not going to, but really how to put all those together.
We'd have to bring on someone else to talk about that.
Yes, I'm not qualified. I have to get Andrea or one of her kids on here for so that true. One. But again, digging deeper into like the thought process behind every movement that we're choosing and really just the essential components of your lower body training. Feel good to just hop into it from here?
I feel great.
Good. All right. So let's just talk about some essential components here. Now, one of the biggest variables is going to be exercise selection before we dig into the individual movements that we're going to want within a training day. And again, we're really going to be approaching this from within a training day, within a training week. What are the things we're looking for? Why? How much volume, et cetera. One of the most important components is going to be exercise selection. This is really one of the biggest mistakes holding most people back. So there are a few key variables here. We want something that keeps the target tissue the limiting factor. So we want, if your goal with this movement, we need to go into the movement knowing, and again, it's kind of like, we're not always looking at it as movements versus muscles, but a lot of times, like in this context, we are looking at what muscle tissue is the limiting factor. Again, the thing that would cause me to fail or would cause me to fail the set, what gives out first? And we want that to be, again, the tissue that we're trying to grow. So if in this movement, you were trying to grow your glutes, let's say that again, let's say we're doing a hack squat. And the goal here is to build your glutes. But the thing that fails and causes you to stop isn't tension, fatigue in your glutes. It's your quads. Again, we are definitely still going to get some glute stimulus from that, but it's not going to be the best, most effective stimulus for your glutes. So ideally, that target tissue is going to be the limiting factor. And feel free, if there's any points you have to make, just jump in. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep ripping it.
I'll add along these lines. Also, you want there to be a target tissue that can fail versus, you know, just systemically failing.
Yes.
Now, of course, there are nuances, exceptions all over this. I'm not going to say that I never program like something like a back squat, for example, like a barbell back squat. I do program that sometimes, but for the sake of making this example, like a barbell back squat, there are just so many things that could fail, you know, when you're training that. Like, so these are things that we keep in mind when we're making a well-rounded program. It's like, you know, what are the muscles we're trying to grow here? And then beyond that, like, do we have a good spread of, you know, different movements that are going to touch on all of these things? And so my example of the back squat there, it's like, if anyone's ever really like pushed significant load or like tried to like, quote, take that to failure, it's just like your core is going to give out. you know, depending on your like biomechanics or anthropometry, you know, like depending on the way that you squat, it could be anything. But for a lot of people, it's going to be like their core and just systemically like fatigue.
It literally feels like in Harry Potter when like the Dementors are like sucking their souls out and you can like see it. That's what it feels like when you fail.
Yeah. I don't know how that feels like, but I imagine that.
What you imagine that feels like is kind of like it just like doesn't feel good, but it's not like my quads, you know?
Right. I'm not like, man, my quads are burning so much with this barbell back squat. I just can't do anymore. It's just like, no, I'm like, this is just so overall fatiguing that I can't. So that's the point I'm trying to illustrate.
And on a similar note, these two very much go hand in hand, but the movement makes it relatively easy to bias the target tissue. And again, this is all in the context of building muscles, the number one priority, right? If it was athletic performance or being quote unquote functional or whatever it may be, it might be different. But in this case, again, with that example, nothing more functional than being jacked. But in this case, again, if it's like, hey, I naturally have a very glute dominant back squat and I have to think and work so hard just to be in a position where it biases my quads a little bit more, that might not be the best option because naturally we're going to revert back to where we're strongest. And this is when we approach failure. And this is a big part of where like more stable options, again, like with that back squat example, where part of the beauty of a hack squat is your back and your hips are against that pad. We really can't deviate much from this very fixed path. Really, the most we can mess this up is if we're not controlling our tempo, right? There's a lot
of placement. Good.
Right. I mean, if we're when we're set up well,
yeah,
we can still mess this up, of course. But if we set it up well, then it is much, much easier to get the desired stimulus without us having to spend a huge amount of brain power or waste effort and not be able to get as close to failure, like trying to like keep things in my quads versus like letting my hips shoot up or whatever it may be. Anything else to add there?
I just like to say a hack squat's a great example versus the back squat. You know, hack squat allows you to just slide in, give it hell and slide out. Like that's how I like to tell clients, you know, like, hey, hack squat, just, I want you to get in there, give it your best, get out. Whereas like, that's definitely not the instruction you would give with like a barbell back squat.
Exactly. No, that's very, very, very true. It allows us to get relatively close to failure safely. Last few reps going to be by far the most stimulative for muscle growth. This is another big challenge for most people, or a big reason a lot of people aren't seeing changes. Hey, we're not getting close enough to failure, which is so many people have so much more in the tank than they think. So within that, again, especially for lower body training, this is where stable movements really shine. I'm just going to combine that same point with this one because I think they go hand in hand. Typically, like more stable options. Now, this isn't gospel, but for 90% of people, I will find that more stable options are going to be better for lower body training. Again, for like that quad example, we're really just bringing up the back squat a lot, but like a back squat versus a hack squat, a back squat to truly get to the point where it's, I only have one rep left in the tank and my quads are going to fail. Most people, well before that, it's like my lower back is giving out, my hips are shifting, my butt's shooting up and my back hurts, right? It's very rare that it's like, hey, this target tissue is really the thing that's getting all the stimulus and it's going to fail. Whereas like a hack squat, a leg press, even like a dumbbell reverse lunge for most people, they're just going to like start falling over, like losing their balance before they actually get that close enough to that failure point. Whereas even like a Smith machine reverse lunge or a Smith machine split squat versus a split squat, depending on the person, a lot of people are more athletic and better coordinated and balanced than me, but very much like that Smith machine split squat, that stability that you get from it, it is so much easier to take that tissue to failure and to get there without a dramatic breakdown in form. Anything else to add on that front?
Yeah, you just generally don't want to be fighting the equipment.
Right.
To be working synergistically.
Absolutely. Great word. It doesn't take a huge amount of volume and fatigue to get the desired stimulus. Again, we could probably use the exact same example of the back squat, right? Where, hey, if it is, and again, there's a time and a place. There are times where, hey, you're only training 3 days a week. We might want as much bang for our buck as possible with like all of your lower body movements, because we might just be doing like two lower body movements, compound lower body movements twice per week. we want to get as much stimulus for your glutes and quads as we possibly can. But again, with like the example of the back squat, where it's like, hey, if your glutes aren't the thing that's failing and we're doing this to grow glutes, we're going to have to accumulate a ton of fatigue and push you through a lot to get a reasonable growth stimulus. So again, if we don't get a decent amount of stimulus per set, there's probably better options we can plug in there. And again, like it's not the end all be all, but like that's where the things like disruption, I would say less so pump, but especially like your perceived disruption can be a really good indicator of how much stimulus are we getting from a movement. And do we need to potentially plug in something else? I think we can also overthink that. There's a lot of nuance there. But if we're really like, I do a movement and it's, hey, you've been training this movement for 6-8 weeks. And it's like, I really don't feel anything at all after that. We're probably not getting a ton of stimulus from it. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. Any other points you would like to make there?
I'd say a good example would also be like anything like for all our people that train at home and, you know, they're using like resistance bands. You know, there are some like cool substitutions for things that you can do with resistance bands, but all like most of the time, like the reps just need to be so high, you know, for you to actually like get anything out of it that it just becomes impractical.
Yeah. I mean, those high rep sets basically can turn into a large part of them is junk volume, right? If it's like, hey, I have to do 30 reps to get to those last like 3 or 4 really effective stimulative reps, that is a lot of junk volume. And doing like 30 reps of anything lower body just is the worst.
Yeah, no.
30 reps of anything, actually. No.
Yes. That's cardio.
Agreed. All right. So finally, we want to be able to load it. So the loadability and our ability to progressively overload it is going to be important. This is where like a push-up is a good example of this, where there comes a point, not that that's a bad movement at all, and you can load it, but it gets to be like, am I going to like put the like plate on my back or like set up like boxes and all this shit? Or am I just going to do like a different press variation instead, where our ability to progress it and increase the resistance, the tension and challenge ourselves is going to be an important part of our continued growth. Do you have a better example of that?
Yeah, I'm going to go with bands again. Now there are like I'm shitting on bands here, but there are like the different weights of the resistance bands. So like theoretically you could progress, you know, it's like, oh, I'm using a lighter band today, or like I'm making this harder using a heavier band. But, you know, there are so many variables that you're trying to control there. Like, you know, if you're setting up a band for like a pull down, which I know is upper body, but, you know, it's like, well, where, how far away are you standing from, you know, where you anchor it on the rig? And like, you know, like,
so point.
It makes it hard to progress that, like, yeah, just because it's like, well, are you like actually measuring it the same every time?
Yeah.
There's like a lot of variety or variability there. And then another example I would give, and I love this movement dearly, so I don't want to shit on it, but like, we always talk about like 45 degree hip extension. I love that movement, but for some people, it's really a real challenge to load, based on like their height or like the machine that they have access to. So like it, while it is a great movement and like you really, like it has its place in a program, you can get a great stimulus from it. Like not everyone can.
Some people, you just tell them how to load it properly and they just don't do it like that.
Yeah.
But speaking, I'm just kidding. I don't, you'd refuse to hold the dumbbells in your hands, right? Just like holding.
No, I do. But I'm short that I'm so close to the ground.
Hmm.
That's the problem. And also the machine is too tall for me anyway. So like, I can't actually like,
hand. I was just giving you a hard time, Natalie. No, but really within that, I agree. That's a great point too. If it's like, there's a lot of variability from week to week in how I set this up.
Yeah.
Right.
Like,
if it's,
you know, you're progressing or not, you know, right. It's like, it could be basically, you could be comparing apples to oranges as opposed to apples.
Yeah. And, or like if I'm adding like bands 1 week and not the other, like slightly different variations of the same movement, using different equipment, doing the same movement, even again, if it's like, there's a lot of factors that are going to be important, but that's going to be a huge part of this, right? We need to have those components in place. And then from there, I want to really dig into, from here, in the context of a training week, and we're going to kind of approach this as if we were like talking to a client following an upper lower split. So training upper body twice per week, training lower body twice per week. Really, our typical client, probably a little bit more glute focus here. Everything going forward will be kind of in that context. So getting into the essential components within, again, our exercise selection for the day, first, we are going to have a glute biased movement. Glutes are going to be pretty frequently trained incorrectly. A lot of people start coaching, hey, I want to build my glutes, but I've really always had trouble doing so. So there's going to be a couple different glute focused movements we can talk about here and include. First, we're going to want to talk about the glute max. So when it comes to biasing the glute max is the biggest muscle of your glute. It's going to kind of, it's not going to run vertically, but it's going to more or less be like the biggest part of your butt on the backside of your butt. If you have a better way to describe that, feel free to jump in. But cheeks. Really, what's that?
It's your cheeks.
Your it's the meat of your cheeks. But really here to train this, we need to focus primarily on bending and extending at the hips. And if we wanted to minimize quad involvement, we would want to avoid too much bending and extending at the knee. So basically what this would look like, some examples of this could be a Romanian deadlift where we bend our knees a little bit more. That's going to be, there's going to be some hamstrings and a lot of glute there. Most lunge and squat patterns are going to involve a large amount of glutes. So like your leg presses, a split squat, there's going to be a lot of glutes involved there. Now within that, basically, the more movement we have at the hips, the less we have at the knee, the more glute bias that's going to be. Some of those patterns will have like, hey, get a lot of bend at the hips and a lot of bend at the knees or flexion at each. We're going to get a lot of glute and a lot of quad there. That's not necessarily a bad thing. There's always going to be a good amount of overlap, but she will typically be able to tell, okay, my glutes are the thing that failed here or my quads are the thing that failed here. But again, I think like a leg press, rear foot elevated split squat, where again, we're not necessarily like in that split squat, we're not having the intention of driving our knee forward. Shin's probably staying relatively upright. Our hips are shifting back. We're bending forward a little bit more. Our torso is a little bit more forward leaning on our torso. Going to be a good example of how to train the glute max. Anything else to add there as far as like what that looks like?
No, I was going to say, well, you said RDL and, I was going to say something like, a good morning would be a great way to illustrate our earlier points about lack of stability and like spinal. So like, while this is a hip flexion movement that would kind of highlight or train your glutes, might not be one that we'd choose, just to tie in our earlier points, but
a great point. Of hip hinge. Absolutely. Okay. So within our, again, the typical client that we're going to program for, we're going to want at least one lengthened overload movement per lower body training session where the glute max is the limiting factor, and probably 2 to 3 of these per training week. So again, lengthened overload is going to be more challenging where the muscle is stretched. So really most of your, depending on the leg press, most leg presses, aside from like the side back squat press, that'll actually, it's still a good option though. Like I would still use that in this case. I would say really we could look at this as a compound movement for the glutes, like 2 to 3 where the glutes are for the glute max, where the glute max is the limiting factor, 2 to 3 of those per week is really what we're typically looking at here. Again, it could be a squat, a lunge, or a hinge, but we want the glute max to be the limiting factor, not the quads. Anything else to add to that?
Mm-mm, I agree.
Okay. And again, like if we were really focused on glutes, maybe not caring about quads at all, we could potentially bump that to like 4 per week, mm-hmm. but I think 2 to 3 is a pretty standard and a good baseline for most people to grow from. And then from there, we have short and overload glute max movements. So this is going to be, again, the movement's going to be hardest in the contracted position. So when the tissue is shortened, so think like when you're squeezing your glutes and your hips are all the way extended. So a good example of this would be a hip thrust. Much harder at the top of the movement, easier at the bottom. 45 degree hip extension, similar, typically going to be the same thing, or a glute kickback. Now here, we're going to get less bang for our buck. But I would say if we're programming for someone whose glutes are our priority 4, we're still going to want to include at least 1 to 2 per week. I personally don't program a whole lot of like short and overload movements for the glute max, just because, again, I don't think we get nearly as much out of it. Again, we get less bang for our buck, and it's not going to be where we're getting the most stimulus per set performed. But for someone whose glutes are a priority 4, we can still drive more volume towards the glutes in that without it being as fatiguing as like, and we're doing a third compound movement where glute max is the thing that's failing, which can start to be very fatiguing. On the flip side, though, like with male clients that I, not to be stereotypical, but typically like don't care as much about glutes, it's pretty rare that I'm in a program like any short overload glute max work. Are you the same?
Yeah, I've done it. Like, you know, there was a period of time, like I put my client Alex through, you know, like some hip thrusts. But I've been working with him so long now, you know, that we've done multiple training blocks and mesocycles and just, you know, in an effort to kind of expand his repertoire, you know, we went through a training block where we had that in there, but like, it was literally like one meso.
Yeah. So. When I worked with the coach who coaches a lot of bikini athletes, I had like a glute, I had a cable kickback, and a hip thrust. I had a bunch of short overload glute work for like 2 months. And
were you training glutes 6 days a week? Like my, a bikini athlete?
No, it was only twice a week. My glutes did grow a good amount during that time. But would you agree with that? Hey, probably once to twice per week is like the short overload glute max.
Yeah. And in a glute focused program, you know, where again, this is the priority, I'm definitely going to have them in there. So.
Oh yeah, for sure. But it's still not as heavy of a dose as the length and overload.
No, but I really like the point that you made. So I just want to restate it like it was my point, but no, but I like the point you made about, how these movements are just less fatiguing.
Yeah.
You know, so like, it's a great way to just like add stimulus. Because, you know, you think about the length and overload movements of for training glutes and like they're your squats, your hinges, like think about how tiring those movements are. Like we really just like realistically can't put so many of those movements in a training day or even across a training week and expect you to like realistically be able to take them, you know, near or close to failure.
Yeah.
So that's where these movements come in and they're really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's like the length of overload movement. So like a whole meal, these are like a snack. I don't know. Yeah. You kind of understand the analogy. That's where it breaks down. Glute med finally is going to be the last thing we want to consider with our glute training. So to bias the glute med, basically we need hip abduction. So, really the easiest way to, I think, describe this is like a glute med kickback, right? Where if you're standing up, you probably see people do these in the gym all the time. We're not kicking our legs straight out to the side. We're not kicking it straight back. We're kind of going halfway between the two. Or not the best option, but a good enough option and still one I use frequently when it's kind of like, where does ultimately be practical, is even like the seated hip abduction, right? Where you're sitting in the machine with the pads against your thighs, driving your knees apart. People call it like the good girl, bad girl machine or whatever. Right. That again, like driving your leg out to the side, that's going to basically be one of the main functions of the glute med alongside stabilizing the hip. Now this isn't necessary for everyone. Again, this is very context dependent as again, it does really play a role in stabilizing the hip. So when we're doing single leg movements, especially like your split squats, your lunges, your glute med will be trained to a degree, but the glute med is kind of like that upper side butt, right? So it kind of fills out, I'm having a hard time describing the glute muscles today, but it kind upper of fills out imagining like you're, rather than like if your glutes have the side is almost like caved in, the glute med is what should be filling that out. So glute med development, like if you are really focused on having very round full glutes, glute med development is an important part of that. But again, it's some clients I could care less about their glute med. And as long as it's not like, hey, we're having pain due to like this, we're not able to stabilize your hip well because this is too weak, then we probably don't need much, if any, glute med work. But for those really focused on glute development, 1 to maybe 2 glute med movements per week. I would honestly say it's almost always for me going to be just one, unless it is a truly an instance where you are working with a more advanced client, like let's say someone who wanted to compete and hey, your glute med specifically is a big weakness. Honestly, at the time, at least, this is the only time I could see where I probably go too far past that one because this does still get trained. But again, like a good example of this would be like your, a glute med cable kickback is a great option. If your gym has a multi-hip machine, which not very many do, that's another very good option. A seated hip abduction can be a solid option as well. Some people will get piriformis pain from that. Some don't. Personally, for me, like I feel like shit. Like in my squat patterns, like I really get achy, very achy there afterwards if I do that. So I stay away from it. But That I really find just depends on the individual. I don't know why that is yet. I wish I had a better answer for that. But we're not actually going to have a ton of options there. That's also one where I really don't worry too much about LinkedIn overload. We have the, like, what was the name of the movement we learned at N1 that was like the LinkedIn overload glute med ish, where it was like the reverse lunge at an angle?
Oh, was it?
Anyways, we don't have a lot of good options here. And honestly, I don't think we need to worry too much about like really trying to lengthen and stretch this. If you set the cable, if you're doing like a kickback and you set the cable up at knee height, that's typically what I recommend to clients. That's going to be a little bit more challenging in the lengthen range than it would if the cable is all the way in the bottom. So typically I would just set the cable a little bit higher there and call it good enough as far as a lengthened glute med goes. But again, to kind of break that down, we have glute max, lengthened overload, probably 2 to 3 times per week. Short overload glute max, 1 to 2 times per week. Glute med, realistically, probably just once per week if we're really focused on glutes. Hey, you might not need to train it at all. Anything else to add to all of that?
Nope. Covered.
All right, let's talk hamstring-based movement, which is going to be our next biased movement, which is going to be our next focus. This is really extremely commonly neglected. A lot of people like want to train glutes, want to train quads, really don't think much about hamstrings at all. Personally, I think I'm pretty much always going to want at least one movement where the hamstrings are the limiting factor per training day. So if someone's doing an upper lower split, we're going to have at least one movement. Honestly, it's almost always like right at one, occasionally two, but at least one per day that is going to be the hamstrings are the limiting factor. So first, we're going to have a lengthened overload hinge pattern. This will typically be just once per week. So think like a Romanian deadlift, a trap bar deadlift, et cetera, right? Really going to be challenging in the stretch position. It's a hinge. Whereas I wouldn't consider like a 45 degree hip extension this, unless we're really messing with the way we're setting it up, that's going to be more short overload. But here again, going to be much more lengthened. Now, depending on the way we execute this, this could be one of our glute max movements or a hamstring movement. And again, there's going to be a lot of carryover here. But if we were doing a trap bar Romanian deadlift and we were really letting our knees bend as we hinge back, the glutes would probably be the limiting factor. That'd be much more glute bias. Whereas if we were keeping our hips high as we push them back, hamstrings would be much more biased. So if I'm doing that, as this could be actually interchanged with one of those lengthened overload glute max movements that I mentioned earlier. If that's the case, I'm going to incorporate in that same training day a leg curl movement where the hamstrings are indeed the limiting factor. On the flip side, if I am doing this as a, hey, the hamstrings are the limiting factor in this hinge, then I'm going to make sure that I'm including a movement where I am really getting a good length in the glute max, and that's the limiting factor. And I might not incorporate another leg curl pattern, like another hamstring bias movement, or again, if like hamstrings are more of a goal, I may. But with these, the fatigue cost and ability to execute them well are the main things to consider. So again, not that it's like we couldn't program a deadlift multiple times per week. We absolutely can. People are resilient, can probably recover from it. But again, I find oftentimes it doesn't make as much sense as other options we have. So typically, like a heavy hinge, we're probably just going to program once per week. And we also need to consider the ability to execute it well. If we're like deep in the training session, there's already a ton of fatigue. Like systemic fatigue, like I have no problem with programming a hamstring curl before that, or a glute bridge or something of the sort. That's something I'll frequently do. But if it's like the client's going to be gassed and then they're trying to execute this movement that can be a little bit more complex, that's probably not the best time to place that. Anything else to add there?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So from there, as far as hamstrings go, then we're going to have a leg curl pattern. So here we're going to do this once to twice per week, depending on what your hinge biases, right? So again, if that hinge is a little bit more hamstring biased, and well, let's say we're doing like one day per week that like a Romanian deadlift with our trap bar that is again a little more hamstring biased, we don't necessarily need another hamstring focused movement on that day. If I was going to do it, I would probably do like a lion leg curl, going to bias the short position a little bit more. But again, if I was doing like a hamstring bias hinge one day, then I would probably do like a seated leg curl the other training day. Again, going to be a little bit more, it'll probably fail in a short position first, but we're going to train the hamstrings at a little bit longer lengths. And yeah, that's really what I'm considering with hamstrings. Anything else there?
And we touched on this in the hamstrings
episode. Yeah, I feel like we kind of just talked about this.
Yeah, we really went for it. So if you love hamstring training, you definitely want to check that one out. But, you know, I did mention that, like, I will oftentimes program a seated curl the same day as an RDL. To kind of, like, you know, mitigate load, pre-fatigue a little bit. And also, like, kind of getting things, like, activated. You know, like really getting people to kind of like feel their hamstrings, you know, before they kind of get into an RDL. So there are a lot of considerations and reasons that I would do it, but I do it a lot. So I always like to put my little stamp on that.
Yeah. You also say do a lot whenever we're podcasting.
Oftentimes a lot as well. I've noticed. I say it oftentimes.
Let's move on. Essential component number 4, quad bias movements. So, as we mentioned, again, if we're trying to bias glutes, so really our squat and lunge patterns are going to be great options for glutes, great options for quads, or a combo of both. No matter what, both are going to be working. But the degree to which each is incorporated or involved is going to depend on how we execute. So if we are primarily pushing our hips back into the movement, getting more hip flexion or more hip bend, that's going to be a little bit more glute bias. Whereas, and our knees probably won't travel much over our toes there. We'll probably have a little bit more forward lean in our torso. Whereas to make a movement more quad bias, it's probably going to be less of us bending at the hips and pushing the hips back and more of pushing our knees forward, almost like we're trying to push them over our toes, more bend at the knees, bringing our hamstrings close to our calves, and not as much movement at the hips. Now, again, these things don't work in isolation. Like even on a pendulum squat, we still get a good amount of, which is a great movement for quads. We still get a good amount of glutes involved in that. We still get a good amount of hip flexion. That's fine. But again, we should be able to very easily distinguish which of these two is the limiting factor. So a good example is would be like your hack squats. If we set that up correctly, again, our knees should be driving forward over our toes, our torso will be upright. You'll definitely tell quads are the limiting factor. Our pendulum squats. Like if you see the like knees over toes, split squats. Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Right, where people are like driving their knees way forward over their toes and staying super upright. I don't know how people do that shit. Like, I don't know how people can move like that, honestly, but I cannot. But those are going to be some good examples of quad focus movements. Now, lengthen over load quad focus movements specifically. Now, that brings us to the first priority here, which is going to be a lengthen over load quad movement. Now, how many of these per training week will really depend on the goals? So again, if it's a client who's more glute focused, we'll probably just have one lengthened overload movement where the quads are the limiting factor, 2 to 3 where the glute max is. And again, your execution will really determine what the limiting factor is. Or if we're going for a more balanced focus, we might have 2 lengthened overload movements where the quads are the limiting factor, 2 where the glutes are the limiting factor. So like, let's say again, like your, let's say that you are trying to bias glutes a little bit more, then that could look like, okay, maybe day 1, I have a hip hinge with glute bias. I have a leg press with more glute bias. And then day 2, I have a hack squat, quad bias, and a rear foot elevated split squat that's glute bias, right? Whereas we easily just flip that to where the leg press is more quad bias instead of more glute biased, and we have a more balanced program, which that is actually my program for more body. So again, like how the dosage of that's going to depend on the goal. And then we have a short overload quad movement. So here, basically just do a leg extension. there's not going to be very many other good options that you're going to want to mess around with unless you don't have to. And once again, how many will focus on the goal or will depend on the goal? So in a more glute focused program, we might not do any. And instead, like the volume that we would assign to a leg extension, might we devote that to more short overload glute max or glute med work? Or just program it once per week. I will say, like with most women we work with, I will at most program a leg extension once a week, unless quads are a little bit more of a priority. But again,
yeah, someone might want an aggressive quad sweep.
And if you do, I love it. I've been getting that a lot more lately than ever before. And I'm all for building the quads.
I love it.
But again, it's kind of like looking at, okay, we're not going to get a huge amount of stimulus from that, like per set performed. And this isn't going to be essential, right? Where I still want you to have some, we still are going to want to have some quad development. We're still going to want to be strong in those patterns, but this is going to be more so like the cherry on top of the quad training versus the most important part of it. So there are situations where you just might not include it at all. Or again, unless we're really going with like, hey, quads are a priority, probably just going to incorporate that once per week. Anything else there?
I guess you did kind of like touch on it a little bit, but something that I play around with a lot is these kind of like omni movements, you know, where like you're going to get a little quad, you're going to get a little glute with your quad training. That's a really good way to kind of blend and like spread out volume. So like I'll have a lot of people do like a rear foot elevated split squats where they're not like making it overly glute, you know, and I'm just like, hey, just like drop straight down. Don't overthink it. Like we don't need your knee going crazily over your toes, but like, don't want you to, and just make it like, I use that a lot actually, and make it a lot more balanced. Because that way you're going to get a bit of a blend. And then leg press is another one. Like, so even for glute focused clients, I will often use like a quad focus leg press because I mean, quads are still going to get a lot of stimulus. And then, you know, your glutes are going to work a bit too. So you can just play around with that a bit, at the risk of, you know, overthinking it sort of thing. Yeah. There are a lot of like ways for you to touch on, like kind of like adjust that dial of like glute and quad volume.
Absolutely. And that's, again, I think I don't want to paint it as it being too black and white here, right? Yeah. Like when I have a quad focused leg press in my training, but it's also, I get so much hip flexion in that. Yeah. I still run out of hip flexion before I run out of knee flexion, right? And my quads feel really bad at the end of it, but so do my glutes. I think quads still fail, but we're still getting a good stimulus for glutes. It's still productive. There's a lot of overlap here.
I have a glute focused leg press and like my quads are just screaming. It's just like they're definitely the limiter for me. But
so to kind of put all this together into an example training week, I hope this is concrete enough to really kind of make sense, but I kind of want to just bust through what this could look like in two training days, like two lower body days, right? So day one, we could start with a short overload glute max movement. Let's say like a cast glute bridge on the Smith machine. So here we are. We've talked about this before. Like we like leg curls to start the training day. They'll really like bring more blood to those tissues, warm up that tissue, warm up the joints, but we're also like, we can safely push those hard, but that like takes away from the time we have to spend quote unquote warming up for our compound movements after that. So we can start with a shorter little glute max movement. Also kind of splitting hairs. I don't know if it matters all that much one or the other, but it's thought that moving from a shortened overload movement to a lengthened overload movement for the same tissue, there's probably going to be less drop off. Like short overload movement, we don't carry a ton of fatigue into that lengthened overload movement. We can still get good performance there. Whereas the performance for the short overload movement after the lengthened overload suffers a little bit more. So potentially I think that's splitting hairs. I don't think it matters all that much. Still like program it either way, depending on the program, but could potentially make an argument for that. Then we might follow that up with a hip hinge, maybe 2 to 3 sets. And again, a good example of that would be, let's make this one more glute biased. So let's say like a bent knee RDL with a trap bar. Then we can move into a squat or a lunge pattern. Now here we would want this to be a very stable option, especially when we're coming from a movement like a hip hinge. Again, like there will sometimes be a little bit more fatigue. So if we're doing like a movement that requires a lot of stability and coordination, it's less likely that we'll be able to get to that failure point we want. Whereas more stable options as we get deeper into the training session are typically going to be the better options. So let's say like a Smith machine rear foot elevated split squat, and again, make that a little bit more glute biased. And really here, especially if your hinge we did previously wasn't glute biased, I would make sure this was. Then I would probably do a leg curl variation. And then we could get into some core work, or this could be some glute meat work if glutes are really a big priority. And then we would have optional calves. I put optional calves at the end of both of these days because I forgot to include calves on brand for the rest of this episode. Day two, we could start that with a seated leg curl. So really I would probably have done, again, that day one for that leg curl variation, probably have done like a lying. Again, as we mentioned with that like hip hinge to probably pair that with shorter overload. So day two, get a little bit longer hamstrings there. Then we would follow that up with a squat or a lunge pattern. Again, I would probably make this more glute biased. So that could be like a leg press, Or that could be maybe a single leg move, like a single leg press would be a great example there. Going into a leg extension, or this could also be a glute max short overload movement with like a, again, so this could be like a 45 degree hip extension in this case. And then we would probably move into a quad bias squat or a lunge. And again, this would really depend on what we did for that first pattern, but let's say I did a single leg press for that first one with a little bit more glute bias. Here I might do like a hack squat. And then after this is probably where I put, if I was going to incorporate some glute med work, a glute med kickback or hip abduction. I hope that was concrete. What I'm going to do, if you're listening to this and you're like, I have no idea how you actually just like what you're, if that didn't make sense, shoot me a DM and I will actually just send you this. I have all this laid out so we can just send you a screenshot of it and make it easier. Shoot Natalie or myself a DM if you want this.
Just a visual learner, which I am.
Yeah.
Like I like to look at things and that's like, oh yeah, that makes total sense.
But feel free to shoot us either of us a DM. I hope that made sense though. Yeah. And I think that's really it as far as optimizing the lower body training side of things. Do you have anything else to add there?
I will add that I am likely to have like a unilateral movement on one on each day.
Oh, yeah.
Just big shout fan. That out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like maybe on one day, you know, it's going to be a split squat of some sort. And then maybe on the next day, it's going to be like a reverse lunge or, you know, a lunge or single leg press or something like that. But I do like to have like kind of a split squat in particular, at least once a week. Or like if one of my unilateral movements is like a single leg press, which I do love because again, it's so mm-hmm. stable. Mm-hmm. It's a movement that people can do quite well and push quite hard. So see our earlier points, it falls into like all of those, it ticks all of those boxes. But I do like to have something like a split squat where, you know, you really have to like work for that hip stability and that like kind of like hip IR, like internal rotation, like a lot of people lack. So I like to always make it a point to have that.
I also find, I just had this thought, but I find, I don't know why this is, but single leg movements, when we're talking about like, hey, you're choosing a squat or a lunge pattern for glutes, single leg movements seem to lend themselves better to glute training for whatever reason. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would.
I don't know why that is.
I would. I think, and we talked about this before, but you know, a lot of people have a hard time getting into even just like a quad focus movement. That's not something like a hack where, you know, you just like slide and do it.
Right.
But like, you know, even something like a heel elevated Smith squat, like if you don't have a hack squat at your gym or your coach just forces you to do a heel.
You say it's in your program and you do
it. It is. I did them last week. But you know, if you don't have a hack and you're doing like a heel elevated Smith squat, I've had to coach a lot of clients through that. And they have a very difficult time getting into that position, you know, where like, they're kind of, I always like to say like, hey, pretend like you're like sitting on your heels, mm-hmm. you know, and like drive your, like go straight down, try and imagine like you're sitting on your heels, drive your knees forward over your toes. Like even that bilaterally is difficult for a lot of people to get into. So then you pare that down or more like you up the ante and you ask them to do it on one side. And it's like, you know, it just, I think the balance and stability component is a lot harder as well. Like I just with your center of mass, I think that's why, but yeah, like a front heel elevated split squat, for example, like that's hard. If that's one of our options, like I do have a client, like my client Zach, you know, his gym is actually pretty limited with the stuff that they have. And so I have him doing that because I really, really want, you know, another quad movement.
Yeah.
And I just have him use like a hand support.
Yeah.
Which helps immensely. Not perfect, but like it helps a lot. But yeah, I just think like balance is such an issue with that. I think you're right.
Hmm. Okay. I'll have to think about that more. Anyways, that's what we have for you. Hopefully this was helpful. Again, if you want the program, just DM either of us. We got you. And we will catch you guys next time.